The following is a class on the Srimad Bhagavatam, 1st Canto, 4th Chapter, Text Number 10, given by His Holiness Radhanath Swami Maharaj, recorded on 18th September 1994 in Bombay, India.
सम्राट कस्य न वाहेतो बान्धूनां मानवर्धना प्रायोपविष्टो गङ्गायाम् अनादृत्याधिरात् श्रियम्
And possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death?
Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada.
Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world in all the seas and oceans, and he did not have to take the trouble to acquire such a kingdom by his own effort. He inherited it from his grandfathers, Maharaj Yudhisthira and brothers. Besides that, he was doing well in the administration and was worthy of the good names of his forefathers. Consequently, there was nothing undesirable in his opulence and administration. Then why should he give up all of these favorable circumstances and sit down on the bank of the Ganges, fasting till death? This is astonishing, and therefore all were eager to know the cause. Om Akyanti Medandasya Gyananjana Chalakaya Chakshurun Militam Jena Asmai Sri Guruve Namaha. And possessed all the opulences of his acquired kingdom. He was so exalted that he was increasing the prestige of the Pandu dynasty. Why did he give up everything to sit down on the bank of the Ganges and fast until death? Generally, we find that even the most religious personalities who are in the grihastha ashram, who are keeping Krishna in center of all of their responsibilities, family, social, political, occupational, that they wait until the dusk of their life, when they are old and they are not able to maintain their particular pace and efficiency, then they take to a life of renunciation. In fact, this is the standard procedure according to the Varnashram system. For the first 25 years, it is recommended that one is a brahmachari. One lives very simple. As a student, studying the shastra, learning how to discipline himself properly. And then if that inclination is strong within one's mind, one takes to the grihastha ashram, raises a family, marries a virtuous and chaste woman to share Krishna consciousness life with, produces children, raises them in Krishna consciousness, and responsibly takes care of the economic condition of the family as well, oftentimes inheriting some sort of occupation from one's forefathers, and developing, building, dedicating as far as possible the fruits of their labor for the benefit of the world by assisting in the spreading of Krishna consciousness. And after the children are grown and the grihastha is no longer really at his peak of efficiency, at that time, in a very gracious and respectable way, he retires, turns whatever responsibilities there are over to the elder children, and then he takes to Vanaprast along with wife. They both simply utilize all of their time for the purpose of cultivating higher consciousness by serving and associating with sadhus, by studying Srimad Bhagavatam and other bhakti scriptures, by increasing the chanting of the holy names, by engaging in more preaching activities, by visiting holy places of pilgrimage. And at the end of one's life, perhaps the last years, it is recommended for certain orders of society to accept sannyas, where one lives a life of complete simplicity and renunciation, especially in the Gaudiya Vaishnava movement, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta and Srila Prabhupada has presented to us. During that time, we should preach Krishna consciousness by our example and by our words. And then, at the very end of one's life, one should simply be immersed in bhajan and go back home, back to Godhead, if that is where Krishna so desires that we serve. So this is the standard tradition of the true Vedic society. In fact, Srila Prabhupada would sometimes say that the word Hinduism was a word that was manufactured by the Muslims in Afghanistan when they were referring to the people who were living near the Sindhu River. They called them the Sindhus, later became Hindus. But he explained, but the real name for the religion of the Vedas is Varnashram Dharma. It is the process by which everyone becomes highly elevated in genuine spiritual life. And of course, the essence of Varnashram Dharma is Bhagavad Dharma. To learn that our eternal occupation in Varnashram is to be the servant of the Lord Sri Krishna. Atha pumbir vijasreshtas varnashrama vibhagasha svanushtatasya dharmasya samsadir haritoshanam. Within the varnashram system, at every phase of our life, whether we are brahmacharis, grihastas, vanaprastas, sannyasis, or as far as the social orders, brahmins, kshatriyas, vaishyas, or shudras, our duties should be performed to please Krishna, to serve Krishna, under the direction of a proper spiritual master. Tasmad gurum prapadyeta jigyasu sraya utamam. So why is it the sages of Naimasharanya are inquiring from Srila Sutra? Sages of Naimasharanya are inquiring that Emperor Parikshit, he was at the prime of his life. He was young, he was strong, he had just recently inherited the whole kingdom from his father. There were no troubles. Sometimes people renounce the world because of frustration, because they just don't want to deal with the anxieties of material life anymore. Like we have heard the story of the Avanti Brahman. He was very successful in his material life, and he had no inclination toward renunciation. But when everything was taken away, and he was utterly frustrated, his mind was disturbed, he was pretty much in a materially hopeless condition, then he took to a life of complete renunciation and accepted Tridanda Sannyas and became a perfected soul. But Maharaj Parikshit had no anxieties, no disturbances, no frustrations. He was the perfect king. All of the good citizens loved him. He didn't have any opposing party trying to take the kingdom away from him. The Pandavas had Duryodhana, Dhritarashtra. There was so much conflict. The politicians today in the West, there's the Democrats and the Republicans always fighting over who will rule, always blaspheming each other, trying to degrade the public image of the other party. Here we have the BJP and the Janata Dal and the Congress One and all these different parties, growing more parties every day practically. Shiv Sena. And they're always criticizing each other and blaspheming each other and trying to push one another out of office to take the seat. And it's frustrating. But Maharaj Parikshit, there was no opposing parties. Everyone agreed that he was best. Can you imagine a country where everyone agrees that the king is best and all the politicians are his faithful, loyal, humble servants? They love him. They actually love him. All the good citizens of the world loved Maharaj Parikshit as much as they would love their own father, because he was so kind and gentle and so much a beneficiary of everyone who was good. But for those who were thieves and rogues, they feared him worse than Yamaraj, the lord of death. And mostly because of that fear alone, they gave up all their sinful ways and became his faithful, loving servants. There was practically no crime, because everyone was so satisfied with his rule. There was no intoxication, because he was teaching everyone to be intoxicated by practicing the principles of God consciousness, chanting the holy names. He was also a husband, and he was a father. And sometimes, even people who are very successful in all other aspects of their life, their son is a rascal, or their wife is insubmissive, and it just ruins everything. Even if you're the greatest politician with all powers, or the most successful businessman, if you come home and your wife is insubmissive, or your son is a rascal, your life is miserable. It doesn't matter what else happens. But Maharaj Parikshit, his wife, was very submissive, very chaste, willing to assist him and stand behind him in every aspect of his life, always kind, generous. Whenever he would come home, according to the Shastra, she would present herself in such a way that it was so pleasing that whatever anxieties may have been there in his work, he would just forget it. It was like Vaikuntha coming home. This is a Vedic wife's duty, and this is Maharaj Parikshit had such a lady. And his son was also faithfully very learned, very responsible, very pure in heart, and he was also a great devotee. In fact, his whole family was completely Krishna conscious. So why such a person of such a status in his youth, in his prime, did he renounce everything to sit on the bank of the river Ganges to fast until death? Of course, the sages of Naimisharanya, they are asking this question not only for their own purification, but for the welfare of all living beings. Knowing that the answers to these inquiries were the greatest welfare for all humanity. Munaya sadhu prishtoham bhavadvir lokamangalam yat kripa krishna samprashno yenatmasu prasidati. That the questions you are asking are glorious, Suta Goswami said, because the answer to these questions is the subject of Krishna and Krishna consciousness. Therefore, it is meant for the ultimate welfare of all living beings. Maharaj Parikshit was cursed to die in 7 days. For a mistake that was very minor, and even the mistake that he made was not by his own inadequacy, but it was Krishna within his heart that forced him to make this mistake. He did not misuse his independence. When we make mistakes, it's because we have some ulterior motive and we misuse our good independence. And later we regret it. What did I do? Why? Was it worth it? This is the nature of the mind. Maya tempts us with some apparent opportunity to enjoy or prosper in a way that is not according to Krishna consciousness. And because we are weak, because we still have that propensity to be the enjoyer, to be the controller, we agree with Maya and we do the wrong thing. And then when we come to our senses, we regret it. We
want to just kick ourselves in the head in feelings of regret. How can I atone? What did I do? Why am I spoiling everything? Krishna and Guru have given me so much. Why I am contaminating my life in this way? This is the condition of many neophyte devotees. Sometimes a brahmachari eats too much and he regrets, why did I do? Or due to anger, we criticize or blaspheme another Vaishnava. And then we regret, why did I do it? What came over me? Everything was so nice. Now how to get out of this mess? All relations are disturbed. Krishna's displeased. Sometimes we even, due to social pressures, we deviate from the regulative principles. We eat something or we drink something that we know we shouldn't have. And then we regret it. Why did I do that? What came over me? Why didn't I think twice, three times, four times, five times, 100 times before doing? But Maharaj Parikshit, he was a perfectly self-controlled soul. He had already conquered the 6 pushings. The Vegans. He had already purified his life through devotional service. And he had proven it on innumerable occasions. Then why, when he was in the forest, overcome with thirst, did he give in to disrespecting a Brahmin sage? His whole life was in serving and adoring the Brahmins and the Vaishnavas. We see that he had the capacity to fast from any food and water for 7 days without any inconvenience. That was what type of a caliber he was in. He didn't think twice about fasting till death. And the whole time he was hearing Srimad Bhagavat philosophy from Srila Shukadev Goswami, nowhere did he indicate the slightest desire for food or water. Of course, he was drinking the most nourishing nectar of Krishna Katha. But still, if you were to have to sit and listen to Srimad Bhagavat for 7 days, even though the most elixir nectar of all tastes is coming into your ears, still you would want some break to take prasad. Because we are not of that caliber of Maharaj Parikshit. Or drink some water, at least. But he had this power of self-control. Then why, when he was in the forest, it was not long, at the most a few hours, that he didn't have water, and he became uncontrollably thirsty. And when he went to the ashram of Samik Muni, the Muni was in Samadhi. And Maharaj Parikshit was an authority of the Vedas. He could analyze and understand perfectly well when a person was pretending and when a person was genuinely absorbed in meditation on the lotus feet of Krishna. Because it takes one to know one, and he was one. Samik Rishi was sitting in meditation on Krishna. why Parikshit couldn't recognize that, why he was so overcome with thirst, and why he insulted the Brahmin with harsh words and then garlanded him with a dead serpent. It was completely out of the character of Maharaj Parikshit to do any of those things, because he was a surrendered soul to Krishna. Krishna was just like a puppet directing him to do all of these things. When you surrender to Maya, Maya controls you like her little puppet. She has the strings of the modes of material nature, and she wants you to have sex. She just pulls the string and you go. She wants you to eat and you go eat. She wants you to take intoxications. She wants you to work like an ass to make money. She just pulls the string and you start working like an ass to make money. She wants you to insult people because your prestige is being challenged. So she just pulls the string and your mouth starts insulting people. Every limb of your body, all of your 10 indriyas are just your mouth, your power to speak, your power to see, your power to hear, your power to walk, to talk, to move, to think. All of those abilities, indriyams, they are all connected to Maya's strings. And she's just moving the strings and making you say and making you do and making you think in so many crazy ways, according to her control. Prakrite kriyamanani gunai karamani sarvasha ahankara vimutatma karatahamiti manyate. And the bewildered soul thinks that he's doing his activities. Actually, they are simply being controlled and orchestrated by Maya, material energy, because of ahankar, because of our false ego. We are surrendering to Maya. False ego means surrender to Maya. Humility means to surrender to Krishna. But when you surrender to Krishna, you become a puppet in Krishna's hands. Our independence is whose puppet we want to be. But our constitutional position is a puppet. Do we want to be Krishna's puppet? Or do we want to be Maya's puppet? Do we want to surrender to Krishna through the acharyas and through Guru and simply do as they like? Or do we want to surrender to Maya through modern education, through all of the social conventions, and just act according to their dictations? But when we surrender to Krishna, we are willing to do whatever Krishna likes to assist in his mission. Our Guru Maharaj, when he was requested by his spiritual master to preach in the Western world, it was a very difficult thing. At such an old age, with such little, assistance, to go to such a strange land as America. But when he was just approaching Boston Harbor and he saw the skyline, he came to a realization, oh my Lord Krishna, what is this? Where have you taken me? What am I to do? Sometimes Indian people, they come to America, and when they see New York City or Boston Harbor, and they see the people and the pace of life and the type of sinful activities, they're enlivened because they go there. They're going there to enjoy. They're going to find some new taste of material pleasure. And it's so different in a place like India. When foreigners come to India, if they come for sense gratification, they become sick to their stomachs. Where have I come? What am I doing in this place? It's filthy, it's dirty, it's so backward, it's unproductive, inefficient, people everywhere. That nobody, the way they drive, the way they, everything, the way they dress, there's no sense gratification for a foreigner here in India. But when Indians go to the West, I have seen they become enamored, intoxicated, and totally bewildered by all of the facilities for enjoyment and all of the incredible types of technology. The Prabhupada was coming to the West to try to teach the Americans how to renounce material life and chant the holy names of Krishna. He came to a civilization where the entire economy is based upon breaking the four regulative principles. The entire economy. In one lecture, Srila Prabhupada said, and when this country becomes Krishna conscious, no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meeting, so many no's, the demons will die. Even England, which is somewhat more cultured and pious, and Lord Jetland was actually a very pious person, and this was many decades back, it was not so degraded. When he heard from one of Guru Maharaj's godbrothers about these four regulative principles, can you make me a Brahmin? Yes. You just follow this no illicit sex, no intoxication, no gambling, no meat eating. And Lord Jetland said, impossible. How will I live? How will I survive? What will I do? It is a fact. You talk about celibacy to an American, and they say, what, are you crazy? Celibacy? Giving up intoxications? You become a social outcast. Stopping eating meat? People will think that within days you will die of starvation. They have no conception of any other diet. No gambling. Gambling is one of the greatest addictions. Everywhere you go, there's casinos and lotteries and betting on sporting events. Most people, they can't even sit through a sporting event unless they bet on it, because it's just not interesting. So in this way, so sinful. Prabhupada was coming and he saw the skyline and he could feel the vibration of the place. I'm supposed to convince all these this nation to follow the four regulative principles, to renounce all their attachment to all of their material facilities, and to surrender to Krishna. And they've never even heard of Krishna. So therefore, Prabhupada prayed, Krishna, Gurudev, you sent me here. I didn't come on my own. I'm coming on your order. I'm a puppet in your hands. Make me dance as you like me to dance. I hardly speak proper English. What to speak of the youth? In the 1960s, not a person in this room could have understood a sentence of the youth of America, because their English was a completely newly manufactured form of English. It's called slang. You've heard the word slang. I won't speak any for you because you're devotees. But anyways, they had their own language. They had terminologies which even the adults, their own parents, couldn't understand what they were talking about. It was like code language that only they could understand. Their own generation. It was a language within a generation. And yet, Prabhupada was coming, and he was thinking, I don't even properly speak their language. How will I convince them of the deep, profound philosophy of Jiva Goswami and Rupa Goswami? But Krishna, if you give me the words to speak, then they will listen and they will understand and they will be convinced. I am your puppet, Krishna. Please give me the words to speak. Not only that, but he was so old and he just had heart attacks and seasickness and rheumatism and all things. How is he going to move about? What to speak of teaching them how to dance, as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught dancing by his own example. Krishna, I am your puppet. So we find that the great devotees, to serve the mission of the Lord controls their life and works through them to reveal his divine grace. So Maharaj Parikshit, in a very inconceivable way, he was being utilized by the Lord to set the stage for the Srimad Bhagavatam to be spoken. He became uncontrollably thirsty and he became disrespectful to the very object of his worship, the Brahmins. And he was cursed to die in 7 days. And when he understood what had taken place, he understood that this was the will of Krishna. And he didn't have even the slightest second thought to renounce everything. He took his young son and coronated him as king. He arranged that this would all be done. He himself did everything very quickly. He just arranged that this be done. His faithful, chaste wife, all of his ministers who worshipped him and loved him. You know, this is very rare. These days, nobody's very loyal to each other unless you pay them sufficient money. Then they become loyal. But that's not loyalty. Loyalty means even if you give them nothing, they'll do anything for you. Even if you lose everything, they'll be willing to lose everything along with you. That's loyalty. When Ram was supposed to be king of Ayodhya, and Sita was going to be the queen. When she married Ram, that was the understanding that she would be the queen. She was marrying the eldest son of Dasarath, the Yuvaraj. But when Ram lost everything, Sita showed her loyalty. If you lose everything, I also lose everything, but I'm with you. That is loyalty. That is a loyal friend. That is a real servant. So,
Maharaj Parikshit,
he had a whole kingdom of such loyal followers, but he left them all by the arrangement of Lord Krishna. And he went to the bank of the Ganges, not only for his own salvation, but as an example for all the world to see.
Yad yaracharati sreshthas tad tad evitarojana sayat pramanam kurute lokas tadanuparatate.
What the great men do, the common men follow. And if you take the position of a leader, it's your responsibility. You have to set this highest standard. If you are a mother or you are a father, you are a leader. You have children who are going to follow you. It is your duty. You must be willing to sacrifice everything and anything to establish a high standard for them to follow. If you are an employer, you're a leader. It's your duty to set a very high spiritual standard for others to follow. If you are a teacher, people look up to you. What to speak? If you are a sadhu, a brahmin, or a king.
So Maharaj Parikshit, he understood that his duty was to guide everyone in Krishna consciousness. And this was his greatest opportunity to serve all of humanity by showing this example.
That ultimately there's no other purpose to life than realizing Krishna. And we should be willing to give up everything if that's what is required. We should not be attached to anything that interferes with our service to Krishna. As Rupa Goswami explained, real detachment means to accept what is favorable for devotional service and to reject whatever is unfavorable. Maharaj Parikshit was an acharya. He was teaching by his example. That for Krishna consciousness, there's nothing that we are willing to put between us and Krishna. And he wanted to show the world to such an extreme that he left it all. Most people, when they hear that death is coming, they want to arrange a nice, comfortable situation. It's like, what do most grihasthas do now? They work their life so that they can retire in luxury and die comfortably. Haribo. They work like asses. They can't even enjoy what they're working for because they have so many anxieties and so many pressures. So why are you doing it? So that when I'm old, I will have security and comfort. And I can have a nice bed and nice servants and everybody around me so that I can die in peace and luxury without any needs, with all sorts of nice arrangements around me. If you examine society, people work for that. They work for their retirement. Or today, when one of our devotees becomes a brahmachari, to dedicate his whole life to the highest service to humanity, to cure the suffering of people's hearts and souls. But their parents, they say, but we're about to retire. And when we retire, you must protect us and maintain us and provide luxuries for us. According to the Vedic system, when you retire, you're supposed to abandon all desires for luxuries and maintenance and all these other things. That's what retirement means. Vanaprastha, according to the Shastras, when you're a vanaprastha, you're only supposed to wear barks of trees you're only supposed to sleep on the hard ground. And you're supposed to only eat the herbs and the roots that grow. You're not even supposed to eat cooked food. That was the traditional standard of when you retire. But now we want our children to work so hard to provide soft beds and nice homes and succulent foods and servants and everything else, so that we can very nicely and comfortably spoil our entire human existence. What to speak of when we die, we have to have our status quo, that our fellow cast members will be proud of us and say nice things about us at our funeral. This is material condition of life. But Maharaj Pariksha wanted to set this standard, that at the dusk of one's life, we should be willing to do whatever is required to detach ourselves from everything except Krishna, to make Krishna's mission our life and soul. And what is the greatest virtue? To hear and chant the glories of the Lord and the association of his devotees. That is the greatest opulence. That is what human life is ultimately all about. To hear and chant the glories of the Lord in the presence of his devotees. And at the end of our life, we should exclusively be doing only
Jigyasitam susamphanam Abhite maharadbhutam Kritavan bharatam yastvam Kritavan bharatam sarvarta paribrimhitam
Jigyasitam studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great and wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences, elaborately explained. Purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. The despondency of Vyasadeva was certainly not due to his lack of sufficient knowledge, because as a student he had fully inquired about the Vedic literatures, as a result of which the Mahabharata is compiled with full explanation of the Vedas. Jigyapitam adhitam cha brahmayatat sanatanam tathapi sochasyatmanam akritharatha iva prabho. You have fully delineated the subject of impersonal Brahman, as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in spite of all this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? Purport. The Vedanta Sutra, or Brahma Sutra, compiled by Sri Vyasadeva, is the full deliberation of the impersonal absolute feature, and it is accepted as the most exalted philosophical exposition in the world. It covers the subject of eternity, and the methods are scholarly. So there cannot be any doubt about the transcendental scholarship of Vyasadeva. So why should he lament? Your diaries were full and your studies were also well fulfilled. And there is no doubt that you have prepared a great, wonderful work, the Mahabharata, which is full of all kinds of Vedic sequences elaborately explained. You have fully delineated the subject of the impersonal Brahman as well as the knowledge derived therefrom. Why should you be despondent in spite of all of this, thinking that you are undone, my dear Prabhu? Is here. Being addressed by his spiritual master. Srila Narada Muni. In the Bhagavad Gita, Jagadguru, Bhagavan Sri Krishna, in a similar way, spoke with his beloved disciple Arjuna. Inquiring to see what was the mind of his disciple, waiting for that moment when the higher truths could be revealed. So Narada is in one sense praising Vedavyas for all that he has done, but in the same time, on another platform, he is waiting and hoping for Vedavyas to come to his own conclusion of his deficiency. Vyasadeva, sitting in his Badrik ashram, was feeling greatly despondent. But by all material standards, he had done the greatest work that has ever been seen in the literary field. In this world, people become proud and enlivened when they accomplish something great in whatever field they may be in. If an athlete becomes a champion, he becomes very enlivened, very happy at his accomplishment. If a businessman successfully closes a big deal, or gets a big promotion, or gets great recognition, he feels a sense of self-satisfaction. If a scholar writes a wonderful work, which is applauded by other scholars, receives some degree, he feels inner satisfaction. If a surgeon performs a successful operation, or a doctor cures a patient, there's some self-satisfaction. If an actor gets a big applause, wins some award, some satisfaction. If a musician makes a record that becomes number one, he's satisfied. If a brahmachari successfully fulfills Nirjal Ekadasi, feel some satisfaction. In this way, everyone, according to their particular life, when they successfully accomplish something, there's satisfaction. And when there's failure, there's despondency. But herein we find Vedavyas, as a literary writer, he had accomplished what was impossible for anyone to accomplish. He had already written the four Vedas, the Atharva Veda, the Yajur Veda, the Sama Veda, the Rig Veda. To this day, 5,000 years later, people are doing yajñas, reciting these four Vedas. People are spending their whole lives just to study these four Vedas. Just like Sripad Shankaracharya. When he appeared in this world, he established four mats, principal learning centers, which are still existing today. Badrik Ashram, Dwaraka, Jagannath Puri, and Sringeri Math in Karnataka. And these four maths were entrusted to four of his most important original disciples who he had given sannyas to. And each of these four maths was meant to specialize in the study and the distribution of the knowledge of one of these four original Vedas. The Rig Veda, Yajur Veda, Sama Veda, Atharva Veda. And to this day, over 1,000 years later, still, in these 4 months, there is the scrutinizing study and recitation of these four Vedas, written by Vedavyas. He also wrote the 108 Upanishads. These Upanishads are considered by so many millions and millions upon people to be the authority by which we can know the truth. They are being recited, chanted. They are such deeply, intensely scholarly works. In such eloquent Sanskrit prose. And he also wrote the Puranas, the Linga Purana, the Shiva Purana, the Varaha Purana, Brahma Vivarta Purana, Vishnu Purana, Padma Purana, which explains incredibly deep study of history since the beginning of this creation, and also histories of other creations at other times and other universes. Nowhere is such depth and elaborate history have ever been revealed to the world as in these Puranas. And everything that is spoken in these history books of the Purana
is absolutely perfectly correct historically. All the histories books we find by mundane scholars have defects. There is always a certain slant or opinion of history. But how do we know whether it is actually true?
But Vedavyasa's Trikala Gyan, that means he knows past, present, and future. He's actually seeing the histories and writing what he is envisioning. Therefore, it is perfectly true. It is one of the offenses to the holy name to consider these literatures written by Vedavyasa to be exaggerations or to simply be something symbolic. It is fact. No doubt great symbolism and great learning is to be understood, but historically it is all factual. And he also compiled the Mahabharata, as is being explained here. Even to this day, scholars and poets throughout the world, they cannot fathom how such a literature could have ever been written. It's over 100,000 slokas. And it's all in perfect rhyme and perfect meter, perfectly presenting historical incidents and presenting the highest philosophy, as well as speaking in such a way that every class of men, according to their interpretation, will greatly benefit. For the karmis, those who are fruitive workers, how much they study the Mahabharata and the Gita to get a proper higher understanding of the Karmakanda philosophy. And for the yogis, the Mahabharata is one of the most important classical literatures for all yogis, because it teaches and inspires them to develop greater and deeper potencies and the ways and the means how. And for the worshippers of demigods, karmis, and the jnanis who are seeking liberation, mukti, through their particular interpretation of Mahabharata and Gita, they can find the treasure of everything they're looking for in life. For those who are looking for economic development, sense gratification, religiosity, or liberation, the Mahabharata is a scripture which includes the instructions for all classes of men and enlivens them. What type of literature is this Mahabharata? Nothing like it can be written by a mortal man. Only God Himself could create such a work. And then He took all these Vedic literatures and did what is so difficult. He condensed them all into small sutras. Super powerful, concentrated codes which reveal all the truths of all the Vedas. And the greatest acharyas of all the sampradayas, they have all considered it a great necessity to study the Vedanta Sutra and to present commentaries on it. We find Shankaracharya, Ramanujacharya, Madhvacharya. They have all given their commentaries on Vedanta Sutra. And that is their statement to the world. So, after accomplishing such super excellent, superhuman contribution to the world from the material level, from the spiritual level,
Vedavyas is feeling despondent. He feels like he has failed. And this was his qualification to hear from his spiritual master, Narada, about the fulfillment of the ultimate goal of his life and his mission. If we are satisfied with where we are at, we cannot progress. Srila Prabhupada used to tell us, if a person is under such dense, thick illusion, intoxicated by the modes of material nature, that he really thinks that he's happy in this world, and he really is under the conception that he's satisfied, Prabhupada said, there is no use trying to preach to such a person. Because even if they listen, they will not hear. Because they don't really feel there's a need for anything beyond or anything else. The person who can hear Krishna Katha properly is a person who is frustrated with material life. And therefore, for a devotee, when he sees common materialistic people enjoying material life, he sees that they are in a hopeless state. And he's praying that their material life will be crushed, so that they are frustrated, so they are dissatisfied, because only then can they properly and attentively aspire to hear higher purpose of the truth. Of course, it is not always that we have to be crushed, but we have to be dissatisfied. We have to be willing to understand the futility of all of our materialistic endeavors before we can open our ears with eagerness to understand what is beyond. Because study of the Vedas is not just an academic form of research. We have seen great scholars in the East and in the West who perfectly have mastered the Sanskrit language from a material point of view, and they do research in the Vedas. But the quality of their lives and the condition of their heart does not change even after 50 or 60 years of all day long practically studying and researching the Vedic literatures in the original Sanskrit. And even we have seen such persons, they study the commentaries of the great acharyas as a matter of research, but they get no realization. Srila Prabhupada wrote so many wonderful books, and there have been tens and millions of these books distributed all over the world. And there's no doubt that millions of people read them to some extent or other. And no doubt there's a supernatural connection to Krishna that's being made. But why so few people actually have their hearts transformed? Because they're just not ready to hear. They're still under the false hope that through material prosperity and sense gratification they will be happy. They haven't come to that level of enough frustration. Sometimes people are frustrated, but they still can't hear, because in their frustration
they're so anxiously and intensely striving with the hope that by some material arrangement their frustrations will be resolved. So they're not really materially frustrated because they still think that there's a way by material arrangement. Therefore, they cannot hear. Just like you can take the best type of fire, but if you throw it on grass that is soaked and saturated with water, that fire will have some effect, but practically none. But if you take that same piece of fire and place it on grass that is utterly dry, then immediately it will begin to create wonderful flames. And if you put the fire on grass that is slightly damp, it will just little by little start to catch. So in the same way, if we are saturated with hopes for material prosperity in our life, and we are satisfied with those ideas, our consciousness is like wet grass. The fire of transcendental knowledge might touch us, might come right into our minds, but it has very little effect. And some of us, we are thinking maybe there's something better, but still, material life is what I really have faith in. And a little more effect, but not much. But when a person is akinchana gocharam, when a person is actually materially exhausted, he's giving up hope, he really is looking for something beyond, then that person, when he hears transcendental knowledge, that knowledge immediately enlightens that life. And he's immediately ready to take to the process wholeheartedly. So devotees have a vision which materialists cannot understand, because devotees are actually praying and hoping for the materialist to become frustrated. That doesn't sound so much like compassion, but actually it is. It's the greatest compassion. Just like if a doctor has the patient, if a patient has a disease but he won't take the medicine because he doesn't believe he has a disease, then the doctor is praying, let the symptoms intensify so that he'll take the medicine, so that he'll believe me. Is this true? Otherwise he will die. So in the same way, devotees want to see the world become Krishna conscious, want to see the world joyful, blissful, chanting God's holy names, living according to their real constitutional position. And they know that the word of God can save them ultimately from the repetition of birth and death. Sometimes devotees, they take to Krishna consciousness, they develop some material skills and abilities, and because their sadhana is not proper, they actually think, now I can really enjoy the world. When I first came to Krishna consciousness, I was pretty useless. I was frustrated. I really didn't have the capacity to succeed or prosper in society. So I took to this path to give me some alternative, some refuge. But now that I have achieved the refuge of Krishna, and my mind is clear, and I've given up all these bad habits, I've developed skills. And these skills actually are very much needed in society. And I can make lots of money. And I can become very much well known. And I can be happy. And I can now actually, I can enjoy. By Krishna's grace, now I can enjoy like anything and be successful. And then their hope for being happy through material prosperity is awakened in their heart. And then such people, they can't hear the Srimad Bhagavatam anymore. They can listen, but they cannot hear. Even when they're chanting the holy names, they can't even hear the name anymore. Hardly. To the degree we still want to lord it over material nature and enjoy, we cannot hear Krishna's name. We cannot hear the Srimad Bhagavatam. The message can penetrate our heart to the degree we are desperately eager and anxious for that medicine. Rupa Goswami says we must become eager, what he calls greed, lobha. It is not the kind of greed like in the material world. It is a greed where we are feeling so desperate that we have to have it. There's no other alternative. There's nothing else that can possibly benefit my life except hearing the glories of the Lord, serving the devotees of the Lord, and chanting the names of the Lord. Yasyahaman grinami harishyetadhanam shanai. Krishna told Maharaj Yudhisthira, Yudhisthira Maharaj was inquiring from Krishna that we are your devotees. We're always thinking of you. We're your good friends. And you are the husband of the goddess of fortune. Why we had to go through such difficulties? Why our mother Kunti, she had to live so many long years with her heart being broken moment after moment by what we were going through? And why we lost our kingdom, we lost our wealth, we lost the dignity of our reputation. We were living like beggars. We're your devotees. Of course, Yudhisthira Maharaj, in his heart of hearts, he knew the nature of Krishna's mercy. But for our benefit, he asked. And Krishna's reply was this. Yasyaham anagrinami harishyetadhanam shanai. When I want to show my mercy to my devotee, I'll give that devotee whatever he wants. But when I want to show my specialist mercy to the devotee, I take everything away. I take away all of his wealth, all of his distinction, even his own family members turn against him. And then that devotee has nowhere else and no one else to turn to except me. That is special mercy. And he spoke this to Maharaj Yudhisthira. And similarly, Queen Kunti, she prayed in this way. Janmaidyasya Shruti Sibir Edamana Madapuman Yat Naivarhati Vidatum Vai Twam Akinchana Gocharam. That those who are too much proud due to the possession of good wealth, good education, physical beauty, high parentage, they are unfortunate. They are attached, they are proud, they cannot feelingly call out your name. They cannot feelingly, intensely, with hunger in their hearts, associate with your devotees and hear from them. Therefore, they are in the most lamentable condition of life. Sometimes successful people come before sadhus to show off what they have done, what they have accomplished, what they have achieved in life, to try to impress us. And we look at them and our heart is just breaking to see what a lamentable and what a unfortunate condition they're in. Yanisha sarva bhutanam tasyam jagrati samyame. What is day for a materialist is night for a devotee. Devotees don't take seriously, they're not impressed by any material achievements. In fact, they are appalled. They feel sorry for those who are materially successful. And they rejoice for those who are frustrated and hungry to hear the truth. This is the society of Vaishnavas. At Navadvip, at the time of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Navadvip was the most flourishing town. It was fabulously wealthy. And it was the highest seat of scholarship in all of India. There was great pundits, deeply learned scholars of the scriptures. There were people who were very, very, very well off, with luxurious clothes and jewelry, educational degrees, beautiful homes, succulent, opulent foods, eating whenever they like. And they were enjoying all sorts of social events. And the Vaishnavas used to come together to cry and weep to see what a lamentable condition they were in. The materialists, they used to think the Vaishnavas were total failures in life. Kolavecha Sridhar. He lived so simple. He had practically nothing. And yet he would never cheat anyone. He had such a simple occupation. With his intelligence, he could have become a very rich man if he so desired. But he just didn't desire it. He was content just selling some banana leaves and making just enough to worship Mother Ganges as the servant of the Lord, and provide not even the basic necessities. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, when he saw Kolavecha Sridhar, he said, I know you have a great treasure that you are hiding from everyone. You are just pretending to be in poverty. Sridhar said, what do I need? When Sridhar was sometimes accused by people, you have nothing. He said, look, I have my cloth. It may have holes in it. It may be sewn in so many different places. But it's covering my body. What's the difference between this and the king's cloth? Serves the function. And as far as food, I may be skinny, but somehow or other I'm surviving. I have no needs, I have no wants. God is providing everything. Because he was always chanting God's name. And the materialistic people, who were very, very well off, very opulent, performing their religious ceremonies for the purpose of material life, they used to just think that this Sridhar is a total failure. He's chanting the names of God all night long. Why? Because he doesn't have enough to eat. He's feeling the pangs of hunger, and he's just screaming out due to his agony of hunger. So they used to actually take vegetables and throw them at his house and tell him to shut up.
Here, take some food, eat it, and shut up, you stupid... You literally useless people. This is the way they thought of all the Vaishnavas, just useless. But when the Vaishnavas would see them reveling and enjoying all of their social forms of entertainment and all of their wealth and prosperity, the Vaishnavas would simply weep and cry and pray to Krishna to save them. This is the difference between material life and spiritual life. Vishwarup, the elder brother of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, upon seeing the materialistic people so much endeavoring to enjoy material life and enjoying it as well, he was so depressed. He couldn't tolerate to even see their faces. It was just too excruciatingly painful to see the face of spirit souls, part of God, in the most embarrassing, shameless condition of trying to enjoy material life. And what was worse is they were enjoying it. The most highly respected personality in all of the jungle of Trikuta. But then when the crocodile attacked him and all of his material pursuits were in vain and he was on the verge of death, right in front of all of his family, he was totally defeated. That hurts when you're trying to impress your family members and right before their eyes you're totally defeated and helpless. So at that time, he was in a desperate condition, and then the remembrance of his previous life of studying the scriptures and learning prayers came to his heart, and he began to offer those prayers to the Supreme Lord Vishnu with pure unalloyed devotion. And he became perfect. Within minutes, Lord Narayan personally appeared before him. Not only did he save him from the crocodile, but he saved him from the crocodile of birth and death once and for all. The Lord personally put him on a carrier that brought him back to Vaikuntha in his original spiritual body. So it is true that whatever we are learning, if we are sincerely hearing from proper sources, then that impression will always be there when we need it the most. But at the same time, there is a saying, Srila Prabhupada actually explained, there's three types of people. One, just by hearing, understands and learns the truth of material life. It's not necessary that you have to go through frustration and suffering. It's not necessarily that you have to lose everything and all your family members have to hate you. It may be necessary. Depends on your receptivity. If just by hearing Srimad Bhagavatam with a sincere heart, you learn the futility of material life, even when all success is around you, then you can go back to Godhead in that situation. So that is first class intelligence. One who learns by hearing the truth. Second class is one who hears but really doesn't have so much faith or believe it. He may externally believe it, but he still wants to try for himself. And such a person, he knows what the truth is, but he's still too attached to actually follow it. So that person eventually gets kicked, he gets smashed, he suffers, and then he runs to the truth and he says, I surrender, Krishna, I'm yours. That's second class intelligent. First class, no need for change in your life condition. Just by hearing, you accept it and you follow it. Second class, you hear it, sounds right, but you still go on with your materialistic ways until you're smashed, and then you say, yes, this is right. I will follow. That is called second class intelligence. Experience is the best teacher, and a fool learns by no other way. That is the actual entirety of that saying. Most people like to leave out the second part. Experience is the best teacher. I've heard it, but I must experience it myself. How many devotees we? I've heard this, yes, but I have to go out and experience it. Oh, so many of our young children that are born in Krishna consciousness, they hear the truth, but they feel, I have to go out and experience it, otherwise I'll never understand it. What is material life? I've heard that drugs are bad. Theoretic. It's too theoretical. I need realization. So I must experience what is drugs. I hear illicit sex is miserable, but I don't have any realization of it because it looks very nice. So I believe it, but I have to experience what is illicit sex. And gambling and meat eating and all sorts of other activities. And they say experience is the best teacher. And a fool learns by no other way. So that is called second class intelligence. And third class intelligence is we hear, we know it's true, but we don't have the determination. We still think, let me try. Let me see. Maybe I can do it. Maybe I will be the one exception in the history of the whole creation who can actually enjoy material life. And then we get kicked, we get smashed, we get frustrated. But still, try again. If the reason why I'm smashed and kicked and pulverized and miserable is because I just didn't do it right. So let me try it again and do it right. And then every time we get smashed, we think, oh, now I'm getting fine-tuned. Next time I'll do better. This way. We hear, we get kicked, and we never learn our lesson. Because basically we are simply insincere. So the best thing is just to have faith. Krishna and the great acharyas, they know what is this material world. They're explaining, dukalayam ashashvatam. Believe it! Don't put any more hopes here. Padam padam yadvi padam natesha. Yes?
When the Gajendra prayed for the Lord, Maharaj, when Gajendra prayed for the Lord, that is motivated by his material distress, and still it considered to be the unalloyed devotional service. How is it?
The reawakening of his consciousness came about through material distress. But if you read his prayers, His prayers were not at all praying for material relief. His material distress simply taught him a good lesson. But if you study his prayers, you'll be very enlightened. Because he's saying in those prayers,